YANA, or the We Do Recover group of NA in the YANA area of NA. And I don't know him, I just met him. I'm sure if they got him to speak, he's probably going to share a really good message. And I give you Mario.
Mario Nominati. I don't know. Every time I share, I'm nervous, man. First of all, I need to say that I'm grateful to be here. This is my first time here, man, and this is, like, awesome. No TV, you know, away. It's like a mental health day for me. But they asked me to share on, Dwayne asked me to share on open-mindedness, honesty, and willingness, man. And I think I'll just tell you a little bit about me, and somewhere I'll incorporate that, but I promise you it won't be a big war story, because we all got those. First of all, you know, I'm number 7. I grew up in a group of eight kids. I'm number 7. And I grew up with my grandparents. They raised me at a very young age because they thought that I would have a better chance if I lived with them, opposed to living in a dysfunctional household with a dad that was non-existent and a mom who was young. You know, and first of all, man, like, you know, I can remember at an early age, man, not liking myself. You know what I mean? And I can remember, you know how it's like when you're a kid and you acknowledge that you have fingers and hands, when you first realize, wow, these work. I can remember that, man. I always felt different than my siblings. I always felt out of place, man, and I always felt like, you know, because my brothers and them are very athletic, tall, and I'm wide and short like my mother. But needless to say, man, I didn't like how I looked and who I was, man. I always felt that I had to overachieve things. Because I was heavy, I felt, well, if I'm heavy and this guy is skinnier than me, I'm going to show him how fast I am. I always went over the top with everything I did. I went out of my way to buy friends. At an early age, man, it was hard for me. It was hard for me, man. My grandparents did the best they could for me, man. They really did. They really tried. I had 2 grandparents from the South, you know, and my grandmother had a 10th grade education. My grandfather was illiterate. But he was a good man, a World War II veteran, and was a good man, you know. And I can remember at an early age, man, like, we were talking last night, I can remember, like, my grandmother, like, you know, here, take a sip of this beer, you know. And I'm sure if she would have known where it was going to take me, she wouldn't have did that. But nonetheless, like I said, that didn't mean she didn't love me at all. I used to drink the beer, man, and get real silly and giddy, man, and running around. And I would go to sleep. I started using that really at the age of 11, man. And I always wanted something to make me feel whole as a person, you know. And I can remember picking up for the first time, man, and I said to myself, man, this is all right. You know, because along with picking up, man, I got courage. You know, I was scared to talk to the girls, so that gave me courage, instant courage. You know, bravery, you know. Really, you know, I don't know most men, but I'm going to speak for myself. You know, like to think they're pretty bad, and I pretty much thought I was bad, but really I wasn't. So this continued on, man, all through high school, man. And, like, you know, I couldn't just drink a beer. I couldn't just smoke a joint. I had to drink a six pack and smoke an ounce. And this went on for a lot of years, man, of self-hate, man, and loathing, man. And I really didn't like who I was, man. And when I look back now, man, I can see that I was an addict before I ever even picked up. You know what I mean? My middle name should have been Mario Moore Franklin. For real. You know, and this went on for a while, man, all through high school, man, and, you know, I didn't think I was going to graduate. You know, my grandparents always was big on education because they didn't have the opportunity to go to school. So, you know, I said, okay, I'll go to school and graduate, man. But all along, I was doing what I was doing, man. And little did I know, man. See, I was one of them dudes, man, that thought, okay, I'm going to be a granddad smoking pot. That was my thing. And I thought I was okay with that, man. I said, I will be the coolest 65-year-old man on the planet, you know. And that's, I truly believed that in my heart, man. I really did, man. But it didn't work out like that. And actually, I went to school in Johnstown after I graduated, man. I came up this way to go to school after I graduated, man. And I did the thing that most people do when they go to school. You know, you don't have your parents breathing down your back or grandparents or what have you. So I partied like everybody else did, man. But once again, I didn't know the meaning. I didn't know moderation. It wasn't my vocabulary, man. Moderation was not a part of my story. You know, it's like every time I used, I had to prove something, you know, when I got high. And this carried on for a while, man. And then went back home, couldn't get a job, you know, right away. I want to make it somebody else's fault. I couldn't get a job, but I wasn't getting up and going out looking for a job in the field that I wanted. But it was your fault. You know what I mean? And I can remember the first time, man, I was introduced to crack, man. And, like, my buddies that I grew up with, man, you know, they were sitting there partying and doing what they do, man, and I happened to be around, man. And like, I'm going to need to say, man, like, you know, I had a sponsor before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. But I had a buddy that said, this is how you do this. You know what I mean? I came around, I'm knocking stuff off the table. Everybody is paranoid, looking around. I didn't know what was going on. They told me to sit down somewhere because I'm messing up their high. So they started, my first sponsor began to tell me how, what to look for and how to do it. A man, I'll never forget it, man. When I finally got it, what I was supposed to get from that, it was a done deal. It was a done deal, man. And like, I came to Narcotics Anonymous, like most people. I had a brief introduction to Narcotics Anonymous in like 1992, 92, 93. And, you know, I couldn't relate, man. Black, fat, white, black, Latino, whatever, heroin, crack, you know what I mean? I said, well, damn, I didn't do heroin, so, and I'm not homeless. I'm not an addict. You know what I mean? Addicts are chump. You know what I mean? I don't eat out of garbage cans. Yeah. And my grandparents, man, you know, when you use, man, well, your family, well, for me, they knew that something was wrong with me, you know, because, see, I thought that what I was doing was well hid and in the dark. Nobody knows that I'm out here smoking crack, you know. And my grandparents came to me, and they were like, son, something's wrong here, you know. And it was everybody else's fault again. You guys are crazy. Everybody's picking on me. My brothers and sisters are just saying that because they're mad, you know, and whatever, man. There's a bunch of excuses, man. And this went on for a little while, man, until it just, the results became overwhelming. Lost my jewelry. Never had cigarettes. You never have cigarettes and you use, and people are accustomed to you smoking, that's a sure sign that you are an addict. No money and no cigarettes, you know. And, this went on for a while, man. You know, for a while, I was the social addict. And then my mother went from saying, hey, Mario, there's no such thing as social drug use. I told my mom, I got this. I'm okay, you know. Just once in a while, I like to go out and do what I do, you know. And this went on for a while. But let me tell you how sick I was. Anytime that you're using with a bunch of other addicts, and they tell you that you need a rehab, something is wrong with you. I had other addicts that I thought was worse off than me because those are the people that I chose to be with. Somebody I thought that was worse off than me. You know, make me feel good about me. Telling me, hey, man, I don't even want your stuff. You need help. Or If you break in your own house and you got a key, and then jump the hell out the second floor window, that's not good. And you got a key when you could just walk in and rob yourself. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Where's the logic in that? And I proceeded for a couple years, man, to be out there and to do that, man. And I can remember, like, I had the first, you know, because relapse is a part of my story. I can remember the first time going to rehab, man, you know, because they talk about jails, institutions, and death. And, you know, I would go and sign myself in to the psych unit because Friday I had good intentions, you know, Friday. From Monday, from one run to another, like Monday, I'm feeling beat up. I'm not going to use no more. Damn that, you know, I'm going to stand by that. And then come Thursday, I start feeling weird. Can't sleep the night before payday. I'm like, man. And then I'm coming home, and I'm separating my money. Put some money here, put some money here, put some money here, some money in socks right here, left shoe, right shoe, whatever. I'm just going to buy a shirt. And then I do the most famous line of all. Oh, I'm just going to stop and have one. I deserve it. I work hard. I'm going to just drink a beer. You know, and I could never do that. By the time I got home, man, I never made it home with money and cigarettes, nothing. Just an empty lunch pail, man. And that went on for a lot of years, man. And I can remember, like, my first time, man, it got real bad for me, man, when my mom said, you know, you can't stay here no more. You know, and I never thought I'd hear those words, you can't stay here. I love you, but I cannot contribute to your using. And I thought my world collapsed then, man, and I had a brush with my first and only rehab. And I can remember an old timer coming to get me, man, and he was like, man, you look rough, you know. So this man proceeded to take me to one of the institutions. And we're driving the back roads, man, and like, I'm thinking to myself, man, this old dude must want something from me, man. So I start checking the lock, bro, to see if they work, you know, because just in case I got to make a quick exit. Because I said, did I beat this guy when I was using? Because he's too damn nice to me. He's setting me up. I don't see no building guard. He's trees. I'm saying, uh-oh, he's going to get me. You know, so I'm leaning against the window, you know, thinking to myself, man, okay, if he tries something, I'll just open the door and roll down the hill or something. You know, something very dramatic that's out of a movie script or something. You know, because that's the kind of mind I have. It's theatrical. And he proceeded to take me to this institution, man. And I get there, man. And I'm in there with people from all walks of life, man. And I walk in there. And the first thing they do, man, is they tell me to take the cotton out my ears and put it in my mouth. I'm ready to fight. You don't know me. I'm toxic as hell. You don't know me. I'll do this, you know, and I'll, you know, my granddad was a veteran. I'll poke a rib out or something, you know what I mean? Don't mess with me. I'm bad. And I'm insane. I'm not having a good day, you know? And these people were not intimidated by me. Are you done yet? Take the cotton out your ears and put it in your mouth, just like we said. Sit down. You might learn something. And I proceeded to go through this process, man. That was my first process with being introduced to the program on an intensive level, man. And I did that for about 90 days, man. And, like, I was open, but not at first. It took a while. I started hearing some stuff, and I started relating to some things. And I get out this program, man, and I need to say, like, a lot of times, just because, like, you hang with people that got clean time and good recovery, that don't make your recovery good. Because, see, from being in this institution in my area, there was a lot of people with a lot of clean time. And then I had the gift of gab so great that they offered me a job. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm with the NA elite. And at first, I was working on myself. I need to say that. Honestly, I was doing what I needed to do, man. I was working on myself. You know, my grandparents were alive. You know, my grandmother was so proud, man. And, like, my intentions were to stay clean, man. But February 7th, man, 1996, man, my grandmother died, man, and I shut down completely. Because she was the only thing that I ever knew, man. That was my first brush with unconditional love with my grandparents, man. No matter what I did, they loved me for real. You know? And when she died, man, I can remember her dying, man, and like, I was like, I must have maybe 90 days clean, maybe at that time. And it just rocked my world, man. And I had a little bit of tools, but I won't say I had a lot. I had a little bit because, you know, in rehab, it's memory. Out here, it's live. You know, that's recorded. Somebody else come, they're going to give them the same thing they gave you. You know, it's a production line. Really, it is. And I had people reaching out to me, man, but I just had that attitude, me against the world. You know what I mean? I'm going to be okay. You know? And I wasn't, man. I really wasn't, man. And some days, I'm still not okay with that. But I've gotten better at it. And I proceed to go on, man, and do what I need to do. You know, my grandmother died in my arms. And I tried to go on to the best of my ability. I really did. And like I said, I had good intentions. But they were far and in between. So she passed on. I continued to still go to meetings, but I need to back up and say, hey, like, I did get to make amends to her before she died, before I even knew she was sick as she was, you know, and I feel good about that. I was able to say I'm sorry for some of the stuff I've done. And so anyway, I proceeded to move on, man, try to do what I need to do. I got a job at the rehab, man. I was working there, you know. And when you're new in recovery, I mean, a lot of people, man, they look at the materialism of a fellowship, you know. And I was one of them guys, man, that I seen the old timers that have done some work, man, to get a nice house, a nice car, a nice this, a nice that. And I wanted that instant gratification. I want it now. You know what I mean? Instead of asking them, hey, man, how'd you get that? First of all, they went to work for so many years. On time, showed up, they were productive members of society, but I never asked that question, man. And what happened was, man, you know, they say that if you ask God for something, be careful because you just might get it. Well, man, I was overwhelmed. God came to the call, man. Gave me more than I could ever ask for. You know, and I was working in this rehab, man, and I really thought I was like a socialite or something, you know what I mean? Like, you know, just touch Mario, you'll get some recovery, you know. That's not, no. No, it wasn't like that, man. And see, when my grandmother died, I stopped working on myself. But somewhere in my program, I had a reservation. In the back of my mind, I thought, man, maybe you can get clean and still smoke weed or something. So I was working at this rehab, man, and I wasn't allowing these women. I was like a fox in a hen house. Because I was clean, had the car, had the jewelry, had this, had that. These women are coming into the program. I wasn't working on myself. I was toxic, diseased up. And, you know, you come into the program, man, women, give them 30 days, man, they blow up like ballpark hot dogs. Believe me when I tell you, you know. So I started looking at these chicks like, well, yeah, she's going to be hot when she gets 30 days. How sick is that? That's sick, man. You know? And see, God will remove you from a situation. Sometimes God gives you what you need, man. So I ended up getting fired from this rehab, man. And, like, I can remember, like, man, they talk about people, places, and things, man. And I can remember being somewhere, man, and, like, that I had no business being, man. They're smoking pot, and they got this little cipher going and whatnot. And it goes around me a couple times. Sure, Mario? No, I'm good, man. I'm cool. But the last time it came around, I grabbed it. So then I did a Bill Clinton. I'm just going to hold it in my mouth. I'm not going to inhale it, so I'm still clean, right? I didn't inhale it. I'm still clean. So I thought, And I opened up that can of worms again, man, and I was off to the races again, man. And, like, I can remember being in a relationship, man, at the time that was unhealthy, man, because, see, when we use, man, we attract people, and even in recovery, you attract the kind of people that you are, man, and that's real. You know, if you're a bullshitter, you're going to attract a bunch of bullshitters to you. So I try to watch who I keep company with, man. And it's not that it's to say that I'm on a pedestal or this and that, man, but I owe it to myself, man, to do that. You know, I need people that got the same goal and are focused like I am, man. You know, we got the same goals, man. We want to stay clean, man. I'm not saying that we're saints or anything, but we got to have the same desires, man. And got into this relationship. And it was kind of, let me tell you something, man. Two sick addicts is not a good thing. I almost died. End up with double pneumonia or whatever that is. That's amazing, double pneumonia. On the bridge, crying in the rain, man. It was like, this was just a real bad going with the wind version that I was giving off at that time, man. And I can remember the girl going away. I thought she was pregnant. Now, you know, for me, I had a moment of clarity. So they say in other fellowship anyway, where I was thinking to myself, you ever use and didn't want to? I was using and did not want to. And I said, well, this girl, she got locked up in one upstate, man, and I was thinking I was going to be a father. And I said to myself, well, one of the moments of clarity, crackhead dad, that doesn't sound good. Crackhead dad, that doesn't sound good. I said, man, I don't want to be like that, man. I said, man, this would be my firstborn. I said, I at least want to set some kind of example, you know. So I called up my friend and told her I was tired. She came and got me, and I went and hid out in the other fellowship for a while because, like I said, I thought I was somebody before. So I did the other fellowship. I was too ashamed. But that was part of my process. And then I went to the other fellowship and I started. I got like 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. I said, wait a minute. You can't share about what you want to share about in here. I got to go back home. I got to go to Narcotics Anonymous. If I tell y'all that my dog is sick and I'm feeling some kind of way, you guys aren't going to judge me. You know what I mean? You're going to understand where I'm coming from. Somebody's going to relate to what I'm saying. I said, I can't do this. So I got up in the middle of the meeting and left. I said, this is not me, man. I know where I belong. I'm an addict. That covers everything from A to Z. Beer is the second letter of the alphabet. It covers it. You know what I mean? I'm going to move. I'm going back home, man. I can't take this no more. And so I called up this young lady, man. And, you know, so we would hang out because we were really friends. Really. My motive was nothing else other than friendship, man. And, like, today we're getting married, man. You know, we've been together that long, man. And, like, you come to Narcotics Anonymous, man, like, you got to grow up, man. And, like, see, I was open. When I came back this time, I was open, man, to what the old-timers, some-timers, and new-timers, whatever, was telling me. You told me to walk on my head and I was going to stay clean. I did it, man. I was a damn N.A. Nazi, and that's real. Snow, sleet, rain, I was the postman. I got up and went to meetings just like I did when I was using, man. Because I hear a lot of newcomers talking about, well, I don't got a car, I can't, you know, take me to the meeting, man. No, man. You got to taste it yourself, man. If there's an opportunity to get a ride, don't be a fool, take it. But if there isn't, man, you got to get out there and make something happen, man. You know what I mean? So I can't relate when they say that because I didn't get mine like that, you know. And I was doing this, man. I was taking suggestions, man. And I was programmed. So first of all, I had to deprogram myself, you know, because I was listening to the guys on the corners tell me, you know, they tell you about the relationship. They tell you what to do if you're in trouble with the law. You know, all these scholars out in the street were telling me how to live my life, man. And I had to throw all that garbage away, man, and listen to you guys, man. Listen to the men in the fellowship tell me how to be a man. I thought I was a man by age, but I really wasn't. You know, I'm still in that process. You know, I'm trying to do some big boy stuff today, man. And some days it's not easy. And I came around, man, and no, I wasn't brimming with honesty either. You know, I had a PhD. I was a master of deception. And I was a spy. You know, I was walking around in meetings like a secret agent. You know? Toxic. But I want to stay. This time I want to stay. You know? And I had a sponsor, man, my first sponsor, and I love this dude, man, and he used to blow my socks off every time. And as far as about that open-minded tea, see, I worked at the rehab. I told you, so I had a trunk full of staff. So me being the smart guy that I am, with 30 days clean, hell, I'm going to do my own first step. I worked at the rehab. I got the steps in the trunk. I got 1 to 12. What you need? You know what I mean? So I go to this man with this first step, man. And I'll never forget what he said. And I'll never forget the look, man. Because somebody pissed you off around here, man. Somebody want to look. I only get mad when they're right. So I go to him. I say, yeah. Look what I've done. I was proud, man. You could have put a ribbon on that first step. You know, I could. Here you go, sir. You know, I hand him this. I'm proud. I step back, you know, like with the Holy Grail. He looked at this, and he's flicking through it. He's like, well, yeah, man, that's some good stuff. You know, I like this, you know? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? That's my first step. It's complete. He said, did I tell you to do this shit? He said, so you're sponsoring yourself. You still don't know how to follow directions, huh? You're going to use again. You need to learn how to follow directions. And you need to get honest. You know what I mean? And like, you know, I took what he said. I was angry, but I took what he said, man. I went somewhere and processed it, you know. And I took what he said, man. He said, you know, when you're ready, I'll let you know. You know, until then, go to meetings every day. Don't take no alleyways, take Main Street, you know. And with that direction, I became willing. I brought the willingness. Because that's a man, if you can take directions from somebody, man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing, man. And that's where the willingness came. And then the open-mindedness, too. Because then I became open to suggestions to do that, man. And, you know, in this process, man, I like to think of it as the gift or the curse, man. And my act of addiction was the curse. This is the gift, man. You know. And I know for one thing, I'm going to say this, man. Like, I know for one thing, man. Like, through the grace of God, man, like, February 7th, that's the day my grandmom died. But that's also the day I was given life again. Somebody pointed that out to me. I have 6 years on February 7th. And my recovery is real personal and special to me. What are the odds of that, man? Your clean date being on the death of one of your loved ones. Someone died so someone could live. You know. And I'm going to skip back a little bit, man. And my granddad, man, my first year of recovery, man, he was real, he's this dude, man. I love this man. Going to a meeting? Yeah, granddad, I'm going to a meeting. No, you know, them meetings are good for you, boy. You need to go. I'm telling you, I like you when you go to meetings, boy. I'm telling you, I don't know. I don't know what they do up in them meetings, but I like them. You know. And I kept going, man. And, you know, he saw me because through that course, man, my granddad became real distant, man, when I was using the stuff. But when he saw me getting myself together, man, he told me, I like what you're doing. Because he was a World War II veteran. It's mind control, son. You know, they used to show that movie in the 40s, Reefer. It'll drive you insane, you smoke, you know. That's how he was from that school, man. So he really believed, all you have to do is stop. He's like, hey, I used to drink a lot, but I stopped, man. No problem. You could do it, too. I was like, man, I'm filled like that, man. You know, I wish I was, but I wasn't, man. And so I celebrated my year clean, man. And, like, my granddaughter was talking about last night. Like, I remember the Thanksgiving when I was coming up on a year. My granddad saying to me, you know, I was talking about this last night where he said, I'm hungry. I'm like, granddad, cut that bird. Please stab it. Do something with it. Give me a drum leg or something, man. Cut it. And he looked at me and he was like, no. He said, because you are the man of the house now. Broke down, man. Oh, broke me down, man. You know, I was overwhelmed. I really was. I wasn't expecting that. And he said, you know, you're the man of the house now. You need to cut the bird. And I'll wait for you to cut it. You know. And he went on to say that, you know, then your grandma made a pact. So we said, you know, once you got your life together, which one of us outlived the other one? Until you got yourself straight, the other one would stay alive long enough to see you get back on track. So he said, son, I can go lay with my wife now. He said, because I truly believe that you're going to be all right, and I don't have to worry about you no more. Man, I couldn't even eat. I was just overwhelmed with emotions, man. I could not eat, man. You know, for him to say that meant everything to me. It really did, man. I mean, it was like, whew, man. And he went on, man, and like, February's a real hard month for me because he died February 26th, 2 years after she did. So like, you know, people are thinking of Valentine's Day. That's not where I'm at come February. And I don't even know where I'm at sometimes. People have to tell me about my behavior in February. Because it's like some subliminal shit, man. I'm really acting out sometime in February. People are like, hey, man, what's wrong with you? Going through something? And then they pointed out to me, and I'm like, oh, man, I know what it is. But I can identify with it, you know. And he passed on, man. And I just, you know, I they're a big part of my story. You know, and like I said, I'm not a spiritual giant or guru, man. But, like, you know what, man? I know that as long as I follow this way, man, I have nothing to lose, man. I cannot go wrong. I carry them in my heart, man. You know, I really do. A lot of days, sometimes staying clean is not enough, man. That's just for me. But I look at the sacrifices that they went through so I could be here, man. And the work, and I'm not going to leave myself out or God, the work that I've done and God meeting me halfway is the reason why I stand before you guys. Because you guys are my peers, man, and y'all truly keep me humble. Just when I think I know something, come find out I don't know nothing. You know what I mean? We are each other's eyes and ears. You guys help me more than I could tell you, man. You know, and like my relationships today, man, are solid. That's real, man. I can go anywhere and kick it with anybody. Black, white, Puerto Rican, whatever. Whatever, man. I can get down with anybody. You know what I mean? Because I had low self-esteem. Narcotics Anonymous has given me a vision of hope, man. And I will carry the hope as long as I'm alive, man. I will carry the hope, man. You know what I mean? And no, we don't come in here liking everybody. Everybody goes to like each other. That's true. But for the most part, everybody respects each other. And if you're going to use even the guy that you think you don't like, he'll have that hope that'll save your ass. That's real, man. That's why I try not to be selective about who I get my help from, man. I'll get my help from a tree if it could talk to me. That's real, man. I'm serious, man, because, like, you know what, man? I no longer put my sponsor on a pedestal. You know, he's a human being just like me. See, you don't start to see the word human until you get to the sixth step. He's a human being. He's another man. I love him, you know, but he's a man. You know what I mean? And like, this program works, man, but you must be honest as to your ability, open-mindedness, and you must have the willingness to do whatever it takes to stay clean one day at a time. Because this is real stuff, man. You know, never in my wildest dreams would I think I'd be in the woods with a bunch of recovering addicts not using. Because I've been in many woods, but I always end up using. You know, and it's a truly an honor, man. I say that from the bottom of my heart, man, to be with each and every one of you. Today, yesterday, and tomorrow, I'm really glad to be here. You know, I'd rather be nowhere else than where I am right now, man. And, you know, if there are any newcomers out there, man, like, you know, you get what you put in. That's real. You get what you put in, man. You build your foundation on quicksand, and, hey, you get what you get. You know what I mean? Because this is a God-given program, man. No doubt about that, man. And like, you know, make your 90 meetings in 90 days, man, and get a home group, get involved, man, because I was a coffee person for 5 years, man. And, you know, at first I kicked the fuss about that, man. I'm serious. I'm like, oh, man, damn, what am I, janitor in N.A., man? Damn it, I don't want to make no coffee. You know, am I supposed to take that? And I did. And, yeah, I want to share something else, man, because I'm sharing this with Wayne. And, like, you know, I always had good jobs all my life, you know, but I didn't appreciate them. And, like, man, one of the humbling things, man, I had to get a job at Taco Bell. Because, see, when you relapse, you take a couple steps backwards, man. You lose every time you use. Each time you go in and out the door, you go one step backwards. So I got the big bell pepper on my chest, man. I was a recovering addict coming in, hey, man, give me an ice cold Pepsi, man. Lots of ice. You know, I'm like, man, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, this is a nightmare. You know, and I kicked and fussed about that job for a year. I told my sponsor, this is the day I tell him to kiss my ass. I told my sponsor that every day, and anybody that knows me will tell you, I cried about that damn job every day for a year. I said, you know what? I'm going to kiss my ass. Today I'm going in there, I'm going to tell everybody to kiss my ass. And check this out. I was the only English-speaking person in there. How weird is that? I'm serious. How weird is that? You know, I used to tell them every day, I'm calling immigration. You know what I mean? Talk English, damn it. I don't understand. You know, and I went to that job, man, every day, man, crying, kicking and fuss, man. But let me tell you something, man. God gives you what he wants you to have when he's ready to give it to you. In his time, man. I want every day, man. And did I cuss him out? No. Did I want to cuss him out? Yes. I showed up because this Taco Bell job showed me how to be productive. How to appreciate. When you get a blessing, man. Don't slap God in the face, man. Take it. Do what you're supposed to do. I showed up this Taco Bell job every day. I did what I was supposed to do. I did the footwork to get out of here now. I had applications, all God knows, everywhere else. But it wasn't my time yet. So about a year went past. I'm between a year at that time. And I stopped bitching and accepted it for what it was. I got a phone call. And somebody else offered me a job in my field, man, that I'm in now, man. And told my sponsor once again. Today I got another job. I'm going to tell him to kiss my ass. I didn't do it, man. The message in that is, man, that sometimes, man, as long as you do the footwork, man, sometimes you got to stop crying about stuff, man, and look at what you got. I had a job. That's a respectable job, for real. You know, you're not hustling dope. You're not kicking an old lady down a flight of steps trying to steal her purse. You know what I mean? I got up and went to work, man. No matter what you do, man, if it's respectable and honest, man, it's God-given. And that's what I took it, man. That's what I took it at after the fact. You know, and like, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about like how a lot of newcomers say this. When they, instead of just telling you to get the hell out of my face, they use this one. You pull them up on something and they say, it's my process. That's a nice way of saying, hey, fuck off. For real. For real. It's my process. It's my process. But you know, your process can kill you if you don't put action behind that. You know. I'm real big on that, man, and like, I don't like to use the term from the old school, but I guess I did kind of get it from some old timers, man, and that's just how I am. And that doesn't mean I'm somewhere that you're not. But you know, I come from some old timers getting in your face after a meeting or before a meeting and telling you it's not okay. You know what I mean? It's not okay. I don't get good Gucci shit you shared in that meeting. You know how you be in a meeting and you get the amen, you almost swear like you're in Baptist church. Uh-huh, speak it, brother, preach it, yes, How you living? The meeting's only an hour. You gotta start the meeting and watch the same person. You know what I mean? Same person. The same person to get high, man. You will use if you don't change. You know what I mean? That's why I try to come from the heart when I speak, man. I really do, man. I'm really not impressed with, you know, I know the book too, you know what I mean? I just try to keep it real simple, man. You know, I don't want to come up here and become Socrates or a scholar or something, because that's not who I am. You know what? I like who I am today. See, I don't have to put on a show for none of you all. You know what I mean? I don't have to pretend to be somebody I'm not, man. God has allowed me to like me. Hey, Mario, you're heavy. You know what? I like being heavy, because I came in here wearing a buck 40. Look like Luther Vandross on crack. For real. I two pair of jeans on and a Kermit the Frog shirt and a pair of fucking Airwalks. And I can take my belt and go. That's how small I was. Today, if I decide to take some weight off, God's time. But right now, man, like I told my mom, you know, hey, being fat and happy is not a bad deal, Mom. Really, it's not. You know? That's really not, man. You know, you never have to worry about me being half the man I once was. You know? I'm serious, you know. This is a great thing, man. You know? And like I said, man, if you're new, just keep coming back, man. This program definitely works, man. This is a great, great program, man. I've met some beautiful people in this process, man. You know, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. Stick and stay. I'm not going to tell you to fake it till you make it, because that's another one I don't like. And that's just my shit. I own that. Because for me, I couldn't fake it until I make it. I'm that type of addict. You know, if I faked it, I wouldn't be here today. I had to get up here and get connected, man. Like I said, get a sponsor, get a home group, get involved, man. And, you know, one more thing, man. I'm going to wrap it up and I'm going to quit, man. And, like, you know, a lot of young dudes that come in recovery, young ladies or old-timers, whatever, they come in the program and think that, you know, you can't have fun in Narcotics Anonymous. You got to get out there and meet some people, man, because there's addicts everywhere. And I've been as far as Orlando, West, whatever. I've met some people, man. Let me tell you, we get down in Narcotics Anonymous, man. You can do whatever you want to do in Narcotics Anonymous. We are some fun people. We are creative, too. Well, we get that from the game, but that's okay, too. But thanks for letting me share, man.
Thank Mario for sharing. The next speaker we have is my sponsor. He kind of got thrown onto this. Probably like a couple other people have, I don't know. I did about 20 minutes before this meeting happened. But he's taught me a lot about those three spiritual principles, and I'm sure he got a good message to share. I'd just like to introduce Walt from Just for A Group of NA in the Swanee area.
My name's Walt, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Walt.
At least they allowed me to get my breakfast down this morning before they asked me. From what I understand, they already knew last night, but decided to tell me about 20 minutes before the meeting. But I'm okay with that, you know, because it's an honor and a privilege anytime I get a chance to do anything for Narcotics Anonymous. And when I got clean this time around, you know, one of those prayers that came sincerely from my heart was, you know what, whatever you choose to use me as and whatever vessel you choose to share this message with, it's not my message, you know. It's a message of Narcotics Anonymous through a God-given program. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. Because someone was willing to share it with me. And I've got to remember that on a constant basis. You know, I've been clean since April 2nd of 99. And you know what? I went to my first meeting, and it wasn't in this fellowship, and it was in 1986 when I was 16 years old. And I remember a guy telling me, "You ain't had enough yet." Okay. You know? Turn around and walk right back out there for the next 12 years, you know, and a lot more pain, as they talk about in the basic text. You know, and I was a hope to die a dope addict. It didn't matter what it was. I was like a garbage can, you know, whatever would fit in that garbage can, put it in there, shut the lid, stir it around a little bit, and let me go. Wherever I ended up, you know, was where I ended up. And, you know, my dad had told me one time, he said, you know, I started planning your funeral when you were 18 because I never thought you'd see 19. Had a plot picked out and everything. You know, and how a kid goes from being a star athlete to being a hope to die dope fiend by the time he's 18 years old and hoping he died because I didn't want to live no more like I was living, if that was living. You know, was beyond me for a long time. And for a long time tried to analyze and dissect this addiction and had no clue that, you know what, it was more powerful than I was. But the one poor ingredient that I kept not adding to the mix was a God of my understanding who I had no idea was. Because you know what, at the early age of 5 years old, I started developing a resentment before I even picked up the drug with a God of my understanding of how could you take a sibling away from me? Don't you know who I am? How could you do this to me? All about me, all about this self-centered nature of this addiction. You know, because I was an addict. I had all the addict tendencies long before I picked up a drug. I remember a watch coming up missing in my grandmother's house. It was a beautiful watch, too. It was so beautiful, I felt like it was mine and stuck it in my pocket. Stuck it behind my dresser because I didn't want no one to know I had it. But when the question came up, the dishonesty came straight out. I ain't seen it. I don't know what you're talking about. 2 weeks went by before my mom, as most moms do, cleaned their kids' bedroom early on, moved that dresser. Couldn't understand when I walked in that door while my dad was standing there flexing a belt, ready to whoop my ass. I had no idea why. You know, one thing I know about this honesty, you know, it'll help you soon forget what you have done because you're trying to cover your tracks doing other things. You know, one way or another. And, you know, like it says in the basic text, you know, in the first step is, you know what? The first time that I've become honest with myself was when I stood in a meeting and said, I'm an addict. Because for the longest time, an addict to me was a person that was sleeping in a gutter, you know, had no money, had no place to live, was under that bridge, you know, either with a brown paper bag or something else stuck in them, whether it was a syringe or whatever, you know, that was an addict to me. I never knew that, and I saw a lot of that in the neighborhood I grew up in, because I used to swim under the same bridge. You know, I never went to a pool. I'd swim in the river where we grew up in that, you know, and, but I remember the curiosity one time, and, I started smoking cigarettes at 7 years old, too. And if you don't think that's an addiction, try quitting it. Because it's kicking my ass right now. You know, and, but I have yet to surrender to. And that's the key. Is surrender and asking for help. A guy came up to me and said, you want to try one of my cigarettes? I said, well, yours look a lot different than mine. He said, yeah, I know. I roll my own. I didn't know it was marijuana laced with angel dust at 7 years old. Fell off a wall and laid there and laughed my ass off. I didn't know what hit me. You know, and, I remember going home that night, and I remember the fear that I felt inside, that I knew I wasn't the person I normally am walking into that house. But the one ingredient that I knew that made me no different than what my dad was, is that, you know what, I would lay in my bed at night and listen to my uncles and my dad getting it in. And you know what, from then on, I knew where my dad hid his pipe in the cupboard, and I would use that from there on. You know, and I'll put it back, so I thought, in enough time before he knew it was gone. And, but I just didn't know how much he was getting it in. this ain't about him. This is about me. It's about being honest with me. You know, and by the time I was 12 years old, and I was a gifted athlete, any sport that I chose to pick up, I excelled at. You know, and but baseball was my love. You know, but it got to a point at the age of 12, not knowing that, you know what, I was getting it in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and not knowing I was an addict. I thought I was just doing what the rest of the kids in the neighborhood did, hanging around with the older kids, not wanting to hang around with anybody my age because they want to play damn G.I. Joe and cars over there in the dirt. I wanted to be out on the corner with my jean jacket on and my collar up, hanging out with them. They got to stay out later past the street lights. You know? Didn't have to worry about anybody calling my name out the door, trying to come in. I wanted to be just like them. You know, and it's funny, I was listening to Mario share too, you know, and I had a sponsor out there long before I even found this fellowship, who taught me how to walk, who taught me how to talk. You know, who taught me how to walk into a store, walk out with something without anyone knowing. You know, who taught me how to sell my first bag of dope. Taught me how to use my first bag of dope, too. You know, taught me how a fool doesn't get high on his own supply. You know, I didn't know I was the fool standing there. Long time. You know, and it was really something that, you know what, I'm at 12 years old, I'm standing on a pitcher's mound throwing a ball about 83 miles an hour, stoned out of my mind. And not anyone else on this field knew it. And these kids are getting into that batter's box. Sure, they face an element of danger standing in there facing anybody that throws a baseball that fast. But now I've added another ingredient into it and taken someone else. And you know when to do so would injure those or others. You know, I've had to seek out people in my recovery to make amends to them for those things. I had a 10-year-old kid step into that batter's box, and I'd always been taught, and you want to talk about misinformed information, I had a coach of mine that told me when a kid turns around to bunt, throw the ball at him. This 10-year-old turned around, and I split his helmet right down the middle with a fastball. And he laid there motionless, and I stood there and laughed. Real callous and cold, even at that age. Shouldn't have turned around and bunted. You know, and to get inside, wanting to feel that compassion, but couldn't bring it out. But man, you know what? I may have just hurt that kid. Not knowing how to do that. You know, the honesty of wanting to tell somebody, you know what, I don't think that's right what you told me. You know, but couldn't get to that point. And going on, you know, and through high school and everything, and having a major league scout at the age of 13 tell my coach, look, you need to get that young man's anger problem under control, or he's going to do a lot of destruction in a lot of people's lives. I didn't think I was angry. It was everybody else's fault. Why have you taken time to screw my life up? I didn't want to go home no more. See, I didn't have an open mind to listen to the arguing anymore that was going on in my house. It was a lot better being out here and listening to these guys. They were my mentors. They were the ones teaching me what I needed to know about life. You know, you know what? The last person I wanted to turn to was a god of my understanding, because you know what? I had already developed this resentment back here at 5 years old, taking an old sister out of my life, and held on to that. Didn't know that I was rotten from the inside out. Had no open-mindedness. Had no willingness to do the right thing, whatever that was, because I didn't have a clue. You know? The one thing that I truly would resort back to time and time again was the one comfort zone that was in my life until it was taken out of my life in 1988, and that was my grandmother. She was the one constant in my life that would not judge me for what I was doing. know what? But wouldn't lie to me about what I was doing either. But would love me anyway. In spite of me, in spite of what I was doing. And used to tell me all the time too, you know, you're going to get into a lot of trouble, Walt. And I ain't going to be here every time you need to be bailed out. There's going to come a time where you're going to have to stand up as a man, or you're going to fall like a coward. And I never understood that for the longest time, you know, and through this process of this recovery, and that it has taken me to that point where, you know what, I reflect a lot on what she says, but not only do I reflect there today, I try to put some of that into action today, too. Because I could talk about this all day long, but if I'm not taking the necessary steps and being open-minded to take the direction and the willingness to do whatever it takes to stay clean on a daily basis, it's just another thing blowing smoke up my ass. You know, and it's an awesome process. Awesome process. You know, hitting that point is, and my dad giving me a decision when I was 13, obey my rules or get out. Well, you know what? I thought I knew what it was about life. I thought I knew what needed to be done, and I thought I had it going on because I was selling a little bag here and there, you know, and hanging out with these kids and didn't have to have a curfew now, you know. And my grandmother taking me in and me trying to go out the door of his house with a bag, and he said, drop it, it ain't yours either. You know, and having to walk out that door with just the clothes in my back, and he wanted to take them too. You know, and getting to that point and realizing that, man, I really want to be here, but you know what? I'm so caught up in this addiction now. I'm so caught up in this lifestyle that it can't even allow me to stay here now. It won't even allow me to take some direction from some people who have my best interest at heart. And I was willing to do whatever it took out that door. Scared as hell doing it, but willing to do what it took. You know, started getting around some influential members, you know, in active addiction, who started teaching me how to use guns and how to wield a knife at any cost. And became real comfortable with having something on me all the time. You know, because I was still a little kid. I was still only 4'9" at the age of 13, you know. But I sure like to fight big guys. It didn't matter to me. And then when they gave me that power, and I thought I had that power, I was sticking something of that nature in my hand, I thought, you know what, I had arrived. I thought I had arrived at the age of 13 years old. Coming up with a decision when I was 18 that, you know what, it's time to grow up and I need to move on and move into and take a decision in my life. And so I decided, you know what, maybe I need to do a little growing up, and I went into the military. Signed up for four years and stayed 14 months. Why? Tried a geographical change and didn't know, you know what, no matter where I go, I take this disease with me and it's me. Didn't have the open mindedness to listen to someone tell me this. That said, no matter where you go, you got to go with it. You could put this down, you could change that, but you're taking it with you. And I didn't know that. I thought I was making a healthy decision in my life. Didn't know for the first 3 weeks in boot camp that, you know what, I was detoxing and didn't even know it. Thought I was just nervous because I was waking up in the middle of the night with the cold sweats and everything else. You know, still receiving them letters back from my boys that are still on the corner. You know, and getting through that process, and one thing was, you know what, I always had a better idea than what somebody was telling me. I didn't have the open-mindedness to take the easier, softer way. I'll go against the grain. You tell me I can't do that, I'll do it. First time around, this program was a lot like that, too. A lot like that. You know, and throughout this part and staying these 14 months and coming back home and finding, you know what, the same people I left on the same corner were still standing there on the same corner. I swear they still had the same clothes on. It was like I never left. I fit right back in there, too. It was like that part of the glove of sticking yourself right back into that finger. It always fit well. You know, and not knowing how much I was not only caught up in the drug, but how much I was caught up in the lifestyle. And now they had graduated to bigger drugs. You know? They had graduated to, you know what, we were no longer smoking dope now. You know, no longer snorting cocaine. Now they were shooting dope. But I had a fear of needles. I had an extreme fear of needles. So I started smoking it. I started snorting it. I remember a guy in a fellowship telling me one time, you know what, you come from the other side of the track. I said, what's it fucking matter when we're both standing on the tracks and the train's coming? The conductor's not going to say, well, you know what, we got to get him because he shot us. He's taking us both out. And I got to remember that. Because the only thing this disease has in mind is to take me out of here at any cost. At any cost. Like a cat and mouse game, it may play with me for a while, but sooner or later it's going to get done playing with me. And it's going to take me out of here. The Narcotics Anonymous has taught me, you know what? I can have a daily reprieve from this addiction, from this active addiction, but I have certain things I've got to do to maintain my recovery. And one of them is practicing these spiritual principles. Whether I like it or not. Because if I don't practice it, I'm going to reap every consequence that comes about. And I'm not willing to pay that price today. On some days I contemplate that price. I say, well, you know what? Maybe I can do this and come back to this later. But you know what? Then that other part of that tape kicks in and says, doing the same thing, repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results. Hasn't that been the story of your life? Why do you want to keep doing that pain? So I come out of the Navy and I figured, you know what? I don't know how to take care of myself. I'm still looking for that another influence in my life because you know what? I need somebody else. I need a place to stay. I need someone else to pay the bills because now my mother's kicking me out of the house because I'm sitting there getting high with my mother. I remember the words she said to me when I come home because I just got done rolling that joint and she came down the stairs. She looked over at me and said, you gonna smoke that or what? Like that frog just jumped up in my throat. I didn't even know my mother was getting high. You know, and I proceeded to sit there with my mom and get high with her. And you know what? This process of getting to that eighth and ninth step, of having that open-mindedness to be able to put somebody on that list when I don't want to, and being willing in that ninth step to do whatever it takes and take a look at the part I play in it, and not what someone else is going to respond to and how they're going to respond or react to what I've got to say and own up to my shit, has allowed me some freedom in that area. Freedom comes at a heavy price, but am I willing to pay it? Am I willing to take an honest look at myself? Am I willing to be open-minded when someone's telling me the truth? Am I willing to be open-minded enough to hear it? Because I can't be just a little bit open-minded, because I'll never hear the message. And I've got to be willing to put that into action. Because if I'm not, I'm in trouble. And it's a heck of a process, too. You know, because sometimes I don't know if I'm always willing. Because you know what? Sometimes my actions outweigh my talk. And if I ain't walking it, and I'm just talking it, I'm in trouble. Because as it says in the relapse and recovery chapter, honesty, open-mindedness, the lack of one of these three can lead to a relapse. It doesn't say it might, it said it can. No,
You know what, when I came into this fellowship after taking this hostage, because I took a hostage right after my mom had kicked me out, I saw this woman bent over a pool table and said, once again, I had a great idea, and said, I gotta have that. Always thinking I needed something. Always thinking I needed something to make me feel good inside and to take me to another level. What I asked for that day is more than I ever bargained for in my life. Because I took a hostage after that. Someone to sit at home, someone to pay the bills while I go do what I need to do. And ended up marrying that hostage somewhere along the line and self-medicating myself through that whole marriage. I put this woman through hell, mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional pain that I had seen growing up in my childhood, and said, you know what? I'll never be like that. But not realizing, you know what? The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You know, and not knowing that, said, you know what? All this was stuck inside of me. All this was adding another match to light this volcano to blow up somewhere along this line, because I didn't let I didn't use that pressure relief valve like it talks about in the steps of being able to relieve that pressure within ourselves and find some freedom to live just one day at a time, just for today, you know, and didn't know this. And when the time came that, you know what, now this started coming out, because you know what, now you're questioning what I'm doing. And I grew up in an Italian family where, you know what, the woman does not question the man on what he's doing. Because it had to be my way. That's what I thought. I used to tell my grand sponsor all the time, my best thinking got me here. He said, you sure? You sure it was your best thinking? Because your best thinking almost got you killed. Only by the grace of God is your ass standing here today. Well, I had to take a look at that. You know, and it says in the open-minded part of this, you know what? Being open-minded enough to do something even when you don't want to. And listening to others' experience is vital to your recovery. Vital. Not sitting there like I did when I first came into this fellowship and saying, well, damn, I never did that. Yet. Yet. You know what? Maybe if he'd have did something different this way. You know what? It's not about that. It's about him sharing his experience, strength, and hope. The hope that maybe, you know what? I ain't got to repeat that process. But not being open-minded enough to listen, thinking I was different, I was unique. And bit into that lie that's pulled around here in Narcotics Anonymous that, you know what, I could do anything I want in Narcotics Anonymous as long as I don't pick up the first one. And you know what, I did a lot of pain over that one too. A lot of pain. The inability to take direction from my sponsor, who had my best interest at heart, put me in many jackpot after jackpot of me coming back once again. Not standing erect, but once again on my knees going, what happened? How did I get here again? You know? And having this process that, you know what, in 1996, in August of 1996, as a matter of fact, I was sitting down at my dad's house because he allowed me a reprieve to come into his house after this marriage and this hostage taking went sour. Because I put so much negativity into it, I couldn't find any positivity. You know, and he allowed me to stay at his house for a couple of days. And once again, you know, always having great intentions, but a bad follow-through throughout my life. Because this addiction robbed me of everything, even the ability to be human. You know, that I sat down and wrote a letter at his desk and said, you know what? It's been real, it's been fun, it's been real fun, but I'm done. And you know what? Went on a 3-day binge and they found me on a riverbank with 8 heartbeats a minute. You know, and I remember getting to that hospital that night and And the nurse, after everybody left, said, you know what, I've been working this job for 18 years, 18 and a half years. Tired of you assholes coming in here ruining my night. You want to check out? Let me help you. I'll pull the plug right now. And me looking at this woman like, have you lost your mind? But yet I'm the one laying there with all these tubes tied to me. Because I didn't have the open mind in this early on to listen to my grandmother say, you know what, you're headed in the wrong direction, son. But all this flashed in front of my head right there. For the first time in my life, I had a moment of clarity. A moment of clarity is something defined as being able to hear something that may save your life. And the nurse said to me, do you want some help? For the first time, uttering those words of desperation, please help me. I can't do this nurse. And she said, good, I got something for you. I'm thinking, oh shit. What do you got for me? She had already been in a straitjacket three times. I remember the last time somebody said they had something for me. I ended up in a padded room. I wasn't about to go there again. You know, I knew I lost my mind, but I just didn't think I was quite there yet. You know, and she said, no, no, we got something real good for you. So for 3 days, I laid in an ICU unit wondering if I was going to live or die. And I remember for the first time in my life watching my grandfather, who was such a hard man. I saw this man one time bend railroad ties, the bars right in half, and I just blew me away when I was a kid, you know. And he come into this room and just looking at me with a tear in his eyes, the first time I'd ever seen him cry, 76 years old. And not being able to talk for those 3 days and him saying, how could you do this to yourself? How could you let yourself get this far? And not being able to open up my mouth, but my mind said, don't you understand? How could he understand? I didn't even understand. I didn't even understand how a kid with such hopes and dreams at such an early age, how did I get here once again? Not being willing to be honest with myself and say, you know what? I'm in pain. I need some help. Not being willing to go because, you know what? My pride and my ego as a teenager wouldn't ask for that help. Wouldn't allow me to ask for that help because you know what? The kids would make fun of me. They would look less on me, look down upon me. You're weak. Don't you know a man's supposed to stand up and take care of his own? You know, and being able to look at this possibility of, you know what? Maybe she got a better idea. Maybe this nurse has my best interest at heart. So they sent me off to this dual diagnostic place, you know. I thought I was getting help. I found out how distorted my thinking really was the first night in there. You know, right before I was supposed to attend this meeting, and half an hour before, this young kid, 18 years old, about 6'4", about 265 pounds, who had been in a basement for 11 years and his family throwing scraps to his ass in the dark, says to me, do you believe in God? And I said, sure. He said, good, because you're about to meet him. And pick my little 110-pound ass up and launch me across the room. And before I hit that wall and hit that floor, he was on top of me again. And you know what? I was begging him to kill me. If that was living, I didn't want to do it then. And I remember, you know what, it was the first night I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through H&I. And as much as I tried to pay attention, through that medication they had me on, oh, I hate that stuff. And they told me, the only thing I heard that girl say in that meeting was, and it was out in Washington, it's a place that's shut down now. And she said, you know what? You never have to use again. I couldn't believe that. I couldn't fathom that word. You never have to use again. I could not fathom that. You know, and they asked after the meeting. How do you do this? And she said, when you get out of here, go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I didn't even know this fellowship existed. I kept trying to do it the other way. They kept telling me, you need to take that shit down the street. I did. I kept taking it to the crack house. I didn't know where they meant down the street. Nobody shared that with me. Nobody would even offer that information. I had an open mind. I went down the street. I didn't know what they were talking about. You know, it got to a point, too, when after I got out of the meeting, they told me, you know what, 95% of the people who go to a meeting after they leave here stay clean. 85% use if they don't. I did not want to go back. I walked into a recovery club over in McKeesport for the first time in my life, and his brother walked up on me with his bald head, you know, and his big grin on his face, and went to hug me, and I backed up and said, hold up. I don't go that way. I didn't have an open mind. I wasn't willing to hug him. I didn't know, you know what, that one day, you know what, that hug would save my life. And he said, no. He said, this is how we greet each other. So, well, if that's all you're looking for, that's fine. Because I didn't grow up in a family of men hugging men. You know? I grew up in a family where you went to work, you did what you had to do, you come home, you partied hard, you fucked hard, and you worked hard. And that was the three things you lived by growing up. Misinformed information. You know? I love what it says in the 12 step or in recovery and relapse when it talks about right here, and I'm going to close right after this. That it says, you know what? We are never forced into relapse. We are given a choice. Relapse is never an accident. Relapse is a sign that we have a reservation in our program. Unless the illusion that we continue to use or stop using on our own are shattered, we most certainly sign our own death warrant. For some reason, not taking care of our personal affairs lowers our self-esteem, establishes a pattern that repeats itself in all areas of our lives. It says right over here, we need to be reminded of where we come from and that our disease will get progressively worse if we use. This is when we need the fellowship. 13 months I stayed around here. My sponsor passed away with 6 years clean in 97. My inability to be open-minded and to get in touch with this fellowship and be willing to extend myself and allow other people to know me, and listening to Tony share last night down here too, really got in touch with that. That, you know what? When he passed away, I didn't have nowhere to turn because I didn't allow anyone else to get to know who I was. I didn't allow myself to get in touch with the unity of this fellowship and what it has to offer through these steps and the freedom that comes about. So for the next 12 months, I had a pool for a sponsor, and that was me. Oh, yeah, I came back at 18 months to pick up my key tag, tell you how good my life was going, and walk right back out the door. Didn't even stay for the meeting. Arrogant, pompous ass that I was. And you know what? I'll never forget the night there, because I was playing on the tracks already. I was trying to drink Pepsi, shoot pool, and check the honeys out in the bar. And a perfect night came along when, you know what, the bar owner and me just happened to share the same birthday at 25 months clean. And before I knew it, and didn't even know I ordered it, I looked down at my hand and 3/4 of a Budweiser had been down my throat. You know, I shared one time with another fellowship, and I said, you know what, I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I'd have 2 beers and I'd break out and crack. You know, my dad told me, no, it wasn't that. You break out. You break out in Florida, California, the county jail. We just never knew where you'd end up. Went to a party one time on a Thursday night and ended up, by the time I come to, it was Wednesday in Amarillo, Texas, and I was in Pittsburgh. No idea how the hell I got there. They had to run my fingerprints for 2 days because they had no idea who the hell I was. Take me places, make me spend more than I ever wanted to spend, make me stay longer than I ever wanted to stay, and do more than I ever thought I ever could, one way or the other. So when I came back in here this time, you know what? The divine intervention showed me the way. I was walking down the street and had an old guy walking towards me. And the open-mindedness of feeling in my head right there, because I had been walking around for a week watching people's lips move but couldn't hear what they were saying. And I knew the last thing to go was the physical sense. The emotional, the spiritual, and the mental was already gone. And it was just a matter of before I died. And I knew it. And when this old guy come walking past me, it looked like he didn't have a bath in 3 years. He said to me, "Have you picked your undertaker out yet?" And I turned around to say something to him, and there was no one on the street. No one. I got to that next block, out of choice. Walk one block that way to that recovery meeting and find a new way of life, or you can walk one block that way and make a reservation at that funeral home. You got a choice right here, right now. There ain't no tomorrow. Make the choice now. Right now. For 3 weeks, I sat outside that club. My false pride and my false ego wouldn't let me walk in there and ask for help. But when I walked in that door, sponsor that I had the day with the person who greeted me and said, "Welcome back, kid," I didn't even know he knew me. I've been in such a fog, caught up in a destructive pattern that leads nowhere, with jails, institutions, and death, and it don't say which order it's coming in. You know? And I remember asking him to be my sponsor, and he told me it'd be an honor and a privilege. And I said, "What?" Nobody had ever told me it'd be an honor and a privilege to do anything in my life. Man, I was overwhelmed. I remember going to him at 30 days clean. He said, "When can I start the steps?" He said, "How fast do you want to recover?" The freedom's in them. Find it. We started doing it. Sure, I busted and bulked along the way through that process. Just like any other recovering addict in this process, it ain't about peaches and cream. It's about learning how to live just for today and finding a new way of life, like it talks about in this Just for Today reading. Well, one of the things happened along the way in this relationship. It talks about in the sponsorship pamphlet that sponsorship is the heartbeat of our fellowship, and that I need to have an open mind when my sponsor's talking to me. Or you know what? The willingness and the honesty to be open with myself is not going to be there either. I need to be willing to do whatever they say there are suggestions in here, and I don't believe that. I believe there must. There are must you must do in here to stay here. I believe a suggestion is just a softer, easier way of telling it. You know, and being able to take that direction and being able at any cost. Look, I've walked the 3 meetings a day and back. It didn't matter to me. They told me, "You better chase this shit like you chase the drug. Because you know what? Something may be chasing your ass." They told me early on, too, when I was here, that you know what? Instead of looking at what's chasing your ass out of here, you better look at what chased your ass in here. I had to sit down and take a look at that. I was not real receptive to a lot of things that were told to me early on in my recovery. But I did them anyway. I did them anyway. Because I did not want to go back to repeating that process again. I knew I was dead. I hear people talk about all the time, and this is where I got to remain open-minded, is that, you know what? If I pick up again, I ain't coming back here. I'm not God. I don't know that. I don't know that. I was fortunate enough to receive this gift twice. I don't want to tell him no again. I'm in the process of being a dad here up in November, you know, and you know what? I struggled with this because I got into that relationship with a newcomer. I didn't take that suggestion that my sponsor had suggested to me. And you know what? As a direct result, I've done some pain along the way in this relationship. I've become overwhelmed at times in this relationship. But the one thing he told me through this process too is, you know what? It can work, but you gotta work it. You're the one who gotta practice the spiritual principles here until she gets down the road with her sponsor. You're the one who's got to hang on to this. You're the one who's got to be responsible, accountable to your recovery and to the fellowship and to her and that baby. My motto was, when it got too hot, I was gone. And I didn't know where I'd end up. You could pick up the pieces later. My sponsor told me, if you don't know what to do, you just sit still. And I do today. I just sit still. I needed to take this time this weekend to spend with some people that are real close to me. My sponsor, my grand sponsor, my sponsee. And just spend the weekend with them this weekend, because I really needed this. I wasn't expecting to do this. You know what? One thing I know is I could plan the plan, but God got the outcome. And I'm grateful that, you know what? In that second step, in that third step, it told me that I was open to choose a God of my understanding or a power greater than myself, as long as it was loving, caring, and greater than me. You know what? If it works for you, just work it. And if anyone tries to share with you that, you know what? That ain't your, that shouldn't be your God of your understanding, tell them to go call their sponsor. Because Narcotics Anonymous gives us and offers us the free choice to be able to choose whatever higher power we choose to have. That's one of the greatest things about this fellowship. You know what? Once again, you know what? Get a sponsor. Get a home group. Get involved in that home group. Participate in it. Let them know who you are. Because you know what? When the time comes, and it will come, because everybody gets their turn in the barrel around here. The time will come that, you know what? You just may need that person that you can't stand the most sitting next to you to help save your ass that day. It just may come that time. You don't know. I've seen addicts that can't stand each other come together to carry the message to a still suffering addict that needs the help so he don't have to die. And it's been a blessing to see. It's been a blessing to be a part of this fellowship. Work these steps. Find the freedom that you so rightly deserve in this fellowship. You deserve it. You know, but the choice is yours. Pain today, okay, may not be freedom tomorrow. But it may be too, if you choose to not interrupt the process and stick and stay. Thanks for letting me share.
I want to thank Walt for sharing. I want to thank Mario once again for sharing also. For me, it's been good, because usually I'm not up this early when I come to these things, you know, and I finally got up, and I got the opportunity, you know, like my sponsors taught me, like my whole sponsor family has taught me, is that it's an honor and a privilege to do anything I can for NA, and this has truly been, like, a blessing today, and I think it's made my whole day, and we have the reading just for today. Before it starts raining. Mario.